From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, Mid-Michigan and beyond? My name's Isaac Constance. I'm back at the helm filling in for Al Martin, who's back tomorrow for the first day of football for this MSU roster. But hey, you know what it is? It's the first of a new month. It's the first of September. Happy September, people. And that means it's football time. We're going to talk plenty of that on the show today as the Lions enter their final preseason game. But there's more than just football on tap, because suddenly the Detroit Lions and Tigers are both in the full heat of things. The Tigers retook the wild card position, and they're number 5 right now in the AL. We'll talk about what they did last night and over these past, really this past August month, which has been so incredible. And if they really do have a chance to actually do something in the playoffs, if they can even get there. So we'll talk about all of that. Also, the Detroit Lions will preview their final home game of the preseason. Also, the volleyball outlook for MSU's team. They're 3-0 right now. I got the chance at media day to catch up with a few of the players, as well as head coach Kathy George. So we're going to hear that report that I had actually a couple of weeks ago. And then Kevin Williams named the starting D tackle on the MSU defensive line. We'll talk about what that means, as well as a significant departure on that very front. But hey, you know, we're going to talk about whatever you want as well. So chime in, be a part of the show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, and help me decide what we're going to talk about today. But first, it's your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Tommy Brady, as he is known by our good friend Ray from Indiana, will be an honorary captain for a weekend that he is suspended for at U of M, his alma mater, according to Wolverines head coach Jim Harbaugh. Harbaugh told Rich Eisen Wednesday afternoon on his radio show that Brady will be the team's captain in week 3 of the season, which is a home game versus Colorado on September 17th. Brady, suspended for 4 games because of Deflategate, told reporters that he would be looking into paths to stay occupied during his time off. The Patriots host the Miami Dolphins on the day following the Michigan game against Colorado, but Brady isn't even allowed to visit the games or the team's practice facilities. Also, high school football tonight, and I'll actually be at a few stops. I'm really looking forward to it. Week 2 of the season on a Thursday night here in Mid-Michigan, because, of course, MSU takes the field Friday night. But DeWitt will be traveling to Grand Ledge. That's 7 p.m. tonight. Also, Lansing Catholic at Everett, Lansing Eastern at Lansing Waverly, Eden Rapids at Mason, Charlotte at Fowlerville, I think I said that right as well, Ionia at Owosso, Dansville at Pomona, Westphalia, Potterville at Bath, Granville at Lansing Sexton, and Hillsdale at Portland. I believe I'll actually primarily be attending to the Catholic at Everett game, so I can't wait to see that one, okay? Also, the Detroit Tigers, yeah, swept the White Sox. Jacoby Jones doubled twice in his second Tigers performance, then raced and dove home for the winning run on a sacrifice fly by pinch hitter Tyler Collins in the ninth inning to lift the Tigers over the Chicago White Sox 3-2 on Wednesday. After doubling, singling, and driving in 2 runs in his debut, Jones scored twice yesterday to help the Tigers complete the 3-game sweep of the Southside rivals. White Sox ace Chris Sale forfeited 2 runs and 8 hits in 8 innings against a Detroit lineup that excluded Miguel Cabrera because of a very minor injury. Verlander, Justin Verlander, countered that performance with 2 runs and 3 hits showing in 7 innings for the Tigers, striking out 9 batters en route to a no decision. Francisco Rodriguez got the win. The Tigers rear up against the Royals starting tomorrow. And in a startling tweet Wednesday, defensive tackle Enoch Smith Jr. revealed that he is out of East Lansing. He's done playing for MSU. The previously redshirted sophomore said in a note that, quote, I have enjoyed my time spent here, but my time here has come to an end. Standing at 6'2", the 93-pound Smith came to MSU as the number 30 defensive tackle in the country, according to 247 Sports. But after redshirting in 2014, he played in just three games this last season. Smith also dealt with durability issues throughout his time with the program. When the Week 1 depth chart came out on Tuesday, Smith was number 4 in the defensive tackle position behind Malik McDowell, Raekwon Williams, and Gerald Owens. A source relayed to Spartan Tailgate that Smith, quote, felt buried on the depth chart. Smith is the second defensive lineman in the last week to depart from the program, with the opening game tomorrow. Cassius Pete decided to transfer after not practicing with the team in camp because of grades, and defensive tackles Craig Evans and defensive end Montez Sweat went elsewhere in April, compounding the void left by the departures of seniors Shalik Calhoun, Joel Heath, and Lawrence Thomas to either graduation or the NFL. And the Detroit Lions will close out their 2016 preseason schedule tonight at home against the Buffalo Bills. The game will be the last chance for several iffy players to make last impressions on the Lions coaches and try to find their way onto a roster. Although starters might kick back and enjoy their last week before game day's kickoff, hey, it's still a big deal for all of these guys who are fighting for their spot on this team or a spot with others. Matthew Stafford and Ziggy Ansah are two of the names expected to sit, but it's unclear whether Eric Ebron will be cleared to return or not. Then, finally, this is a fun one. I'm going to enjoy this story, and you're actually going to hear it right during our current sports intro. But many of you might remember Langsburg star Ryan Wade. So he went on to walk on to Western Michigan's basketball team, and 5'9 kid, really hard worker, good shooter, but he's no longer a walk-on. During the team's trip to Paris, a nice little vacation for the guys before the season starts up, the 5'9 redshirt guard was asked to come and translate a message. What he read was the news and directly addressed letter to him that he was now a full-ride member of the team. The incident was captured on video, and his teammates piled onto him as Wade walked off to make a call to his parents back home from the Eiffel Tower. It's picturesque, and unfortunately, all we've got is the audio to provide you guys the image of that. But that wraps it up for your current Sports Quick Hit headliners. We'll play the audio from that very story right in a second. But hey, if you want to call in, determine the route of the show today, you go ahead and do it. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, or tweet me at Isaac Constance, ISAACCONSTANS. But hey, you know what? Let's get this show rolling. We got a lot to talk about. So here's the intro for today's show. Welcome to WKR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, filling in for Al Marnin. We've got a jam-packed show for you guys today. We're going to be talking Detroit Tigers, Detroit Lions, MSU women's volleyball, MSU football. And you know what? It's September. It's a Thursday. Let's throw it back as well. We'll do a throwback Thursday for you guys at the very tail end of the show. But first off, I just wanted to start off with a very heartwarming story, and that's Ryan Wade getting his full scholarship from Western Michigan University on top of the Eiffel Tower. No really better place that you could pick in the entire world to do that. So it was a great video. You just heard him, a Laingsburg product and somebody who obviously has worked his way onto this team and worked very hard on it to deserve a full ride. Imagine that feeling just for a second, the pure euphoria of getting a full ride, going from a walk-on to a fully enshrined member of the team, scholarship kid. It's got to be the greatest feeling in the world. And his teammates, obviously, as you could hear them, those were all the voices that were cheering so loudly. I think Wade was a little bit, understandably, overcome with emotion before he could really start screaming or partying or anything. But his teammates fully took in the moment and really enjoyed themselves, and rightfully so. So good for Ryan Wade. Just wanted to congratulate him. But hey, folks, I mean, gosh, we have a lot to talk about today, because not only is it the start of September, which means football season, but it also means start of September is when baseball actually starts getting interesting. All the games start cooking up a little bit because, you know, there are less than 30 games left, 40 games left, whatever. And every single one matters at this point. And the Detroit Tigers now know this better than anybody. They are 0 games down from the wild card, meaning that they split that number 5 seed in the AL with the Baltimore Orioles after the Orioles fell last night and the Detroit Tigers beat the White Sox. Now, the story of that game, more or less, was the same as the story of the game before, and it all revolves around one man. That's Jacoby Jones. Jacoby Jones was recently called up by the Tigers. Actually went to LSU. Shout out to him for that. But he's a kid who was playing AAA down in Mississippi, found out on Monday that he'd be playing on Tuesday, and then on Tuesday came up, flew up, and just had an absolutely incredible showing. His first game, he was 2 of 3 with an RBI single that was very important, really helped break the game open for the Tigers, and an RBI double later in the game to help really seal the coffin on the White Sox. Second game, still against the White Sox. He's just, I guess, their bad omen, their most vicious enemy. But he had 2 doubles, the game-winning run, a walk-off, the hit provided by Tyler Collins filling in as a pinch hitter, and he's actually had quite a few clutch performances, even if it hadn't been anything spectacular of a year for him. But he also had another run. So the kid, he's played 2 games, and I mean, I don't know what more you can say about it, but 2 games in this last game, 4 at-bats, 2 runs, 2 hits, 2 doubles, and it really has been that type of story all year long for him. 4 at-bats the game before, also 2 hits, 1 run, 1 double, 2 RBIs. You can't say any more about Jacoby Jones than he's been fantastic, and this is, in many ways, a Cameron Maybin story for the Detroit Tigers, in that they didn't necessarily expect too much from this guy. Maybe come on, play the bench role. But for him to come up here and immediately contribute like he has, it's given this team the momentum going forward where you can say, huh, really, these playoffs are well in sight. And like I said, less than 30 games left now by my calculation. I think we're at 29. So every single game matters. The Tigers, 10-8, or rather, excuse me, 8 of their last 10 that they've won, and they beat the White Sox at home this previous series. They only took 1 of 3 against the Angels, but the thing is, they're closing out the teams that they should close out. They beat the Twins in a sweep, and a pretty resounding one as well. The White Sox, hey, a good pitching duel last night as well. You heard me say Chris Sale, 8 innings pitched, 8 hits allowed, 2 runs allowed, and he's their ace. He's one of the best pitchers in the entire American League, but he's going back against somebody who really looked like a ghost. And I say a ghost in a good way, because it means that He died and then came back to life because that's Justin Verlander. He is having a revival season, and he's doing it with the second most strikeouts in the AL, second most innings pitched in the AL, second highest whip in the AL, or second lowest, I should say. Justin Verlander also 14 wins. No decision last night. That went to K-Rod on the save. But great article by Katie Strang for ESPN. Really just detailed how Justin Verlander has came back for this team. Because the thing is, Verlander, even when he was down, he was always hinting that he'd come back. Because his Septembers and Octobers weren't too shabby. They were always pretty consistently solid. You wouldn't call them anything miraculous, anything amazing, but he looked like, okay, he's getting back on track, but then he'd start off the next season just like he did before, stuttering. You really wouldn't know how to find any consistency on the mound. But now, Justin Verlander has carried this streak through. It's not at all outrageous to predict he finishes the season with 17-18 wins. That's quite the throwback. And this AL Cy Young competition is so wide open, you really don't know who to give it to. Because Verlander's ERA right now, it's 3.3. Very good. But at the same time, usually you'd see a mark quite a bit lower from an AL Cy Young candidate or a Cy Young candidate from either league, to be honest. And Michael Fulmer might have more of the making in that category. He'd have the top ERA in the AL if he qualified, but sadly he hasn't played quite enough innings, thrown quite enough pitches, I should say. But Michael Fulmer, of course, everybody knows the rookie sensation for the Tigers this year, pitching a 2.69 ERA. I mean, 130 innings pitched, 108 strikeouts. Verlander, 198. That's absolutely incredible. And it's just been an unbelievable showing from this Tigers team. Last night, he had 9 strikeouts, 2 earned runs he gave up, and like I said, a 3.3 ERA on the year. The other player who you really have to look to and say, wait, you were hurt? Or there was a time when you weren't playing that well? Is JD Martinez. Much like Justin Verlander had it for a prolonged stretch of years where you could say he was absent or he wasn't himself, JD Martinez was absent due to injury this year. And the Tigers, they missed him, direly missed him, actually, with the, of course, underwhelming performances of Justin Upton. But at the same time, JD Martinez came in and you expected maybe a little bit of a slow start, a little bit of adjustment period following the injury, and not whatsoever. JD Martinez, 320 batting average, 410 in August. And I looked it up. 3-1 is a hitter's count. There's no secret about that. I was just kind of delving deep into the statistics world yesterday. And when JD Martinez, and this guy has a good eye at the plate, keep in mind, when he is 3-1, he's batting 500. 500. I mean, I have never really heard of a statistic like that, batting 500 at any count, except for if you're talking about Jacoby Jones through 2 games. So, I mean, you know, whatever. But the Tigers, the thing is, they can do no wrong at this point, and it's the perfect juncture in the season for this to happen, and that the Detroit Tigers, like I said, 29 games left. Same with the Orioles. Both are tied for 5th, but not too far off from that 4th place game either. Now the Cleveland Indians, we said it before, the Tigers got close, and then they slipped back down. But I don't think the Tigers are going to catch the Indians. 76-56, Tigers 4.5 games back at this point in the season. Also the Boston Red Sox, 74-59. So that is within reach for this Tigers team. They're only 2.5 down from them. That's the 4th. Wildcard spot, or rather the 4th spot in the AL, the 1st wildcard spot. So, really interesting team. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527 to talk about your hopes and dreams that this team will still be playing and playing well as they are right now come October. So, been a really good stretch for this team. The other thing I wanted to bring up real quick is for Francisco Rodriguez to go in and get the win last night, took a managerial decision from Brad Ausmus. And that, maybe it's just me, but I feel like most managers don't like throwing in their closer until the game is in hand. Not in hand, but you've got the game in your hands, meaning you control the future of it. In that, if it's a good pitching performance, a good defensive performance, you walk out with a W, no questions asked. Francisco Rodriguez has been deployed multiple times this season in very tight games, once in a while, even when the Tigers are down. And last night, it was tied when he went into the game. And you know what? He did the job. He got the win for himself. And he went in, only allowed one hit, his first hit that he allowed in five games, actually. So he's been quite consistent recently. And, you know, I mean, actually, if you look at his last, let me count it up real quick, six games, he's got some sort of decision in any of them. He either got a win or a save. And that last one that didn't happen was against the Texans when he actually got a, or Seattle, excuse me, when he got a blown save on that one. So, yeah, I mean, Francisco Rodriguez, another guy who maybe struggled a little bit coming out of the gates of the regular season, but quickly settled down and in many ways looks like the old K-Rod. And he's not throwing 100 either, nor is Justin Verlander. These are guys who really owned in on their other pitches. They rallied and they found out what works for them, which doesn't rely so much on physical athleticism because, of course, that deteriorates with age. So, great Tigers showing so far, and Brad Ausmus, in my opinion, I'm not saying it's brilliant or anything like that, but good decision to throw out K-Rod in that situation last night against the White Sox. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Again, I'm Isaac Constance filling in for Al Martin, and the thing about September, too, is it's not just baseball. It brings us back into football talk, too, because the first weekend of college football is finally upcoming. I can't wait. Michigan State versus Furman. Not too much you're going to be able to tell, but one thing that we have learned, and we'll talk about later in the show, is the defensive line rotation. We've discovered a little bit about that with Kevin Williams being named the starter right next to Malik McDowell, a position of many questions throughout most of the offseason for this Spartan football team, and then Enoch Smith Jr. deciding to depart the program. Very interesting decision. Like I said, we'll talk about that later in the show. But right now, I want to bring in my engineer for the day, somebody who, again, filled in on very short notice, and we really appreciate it. But Drew Henderson, how's it going? I know you were actually watching the game behind the scenes yesterday. What did you see from the Tigers?
I saw a good start from Verlander. I mean, the first inning was three strikeouts. Don't quote me on that. It was a strikeout. I know the first batter struck out. So, yeah, it's good to see. But Sale Verlander, I love it when those stars line up and you see, you know, a great pitching duel. That's the thing that really got my love of baseball going, was realizing it's really about the pitching. I mean, yeah, you got to have offense to score runs. I get that. But, you know, it's... I like the pace of it. It's a thinking person's game. I don't know. I think it's fine. You know, I read all this stuff about they have to change this or that.
Yeah.
And maybe there are a few changes, but you know, to speed up the it's not football. And here's the deal: football has little pauses and things too, where you can, you know, stop and think about the game. I realize I've just derailed your whole topic there about yesterday's game specifically, but
yeah.
Anyway, no, yeah, I had on there in the background, which is perfect for baseball. Well, you know, I was bored up in your show, and then I put it onto the TV of our new newly remodeled green room there,
which looks great, by the way.
And got to see Tyler Collins with that sack fly. And got the run in, and of course I had to go talk to the White Sox biggest fan, Brad Walker, and yep. He already knew about it. I walked into the 90.5 control room, and he was just already shaking his head. I didn't have to say a single thing to him.
Yeah. So you're a pitching fan more so. Who was your first favorite pitcher?
You know, I mean, I'm late to the game of baseball, so definitely Verlander.
Okay.
I really first... got into baseball going to Milwaukee at the Brewers at Miller Park. And that was when Prince Fielder was playing there. So I just liked watching him play. I mean, he's a big dude running the bases, playing first base. I love watching him dive for the balls. I just think it's fun to do. I mean, you quoted a statistic earlier, which I think is incredible. I mean, 500 when you're in that count. I love that. I don't get super geeky into looking up the quotes or the statistics, but when I hear them, I do find them very interesting. But I like watching them play. I like watching the pitching when it's good pitching. I mean, I can go back to, gosh, what series was it? Was it in 12? I think when Verlander, did he pitch twice against the A's? No, that was, it was a 5-game series. I think he did pitch twice.
Wow.
I can't remember.
Okay.
And because they were talking about leaving him, you know, keeping him fresh for
fatigue.
The World Series.
They're worried about that.
And he's like, no, you know, good to go, and put him in there. And did he have a complete game? I know he pretty much single-handedly, you know, the series was tied 2-2, and boom, you know, Tigers beat the A's and moved on. I was actually just looking at the statistics the standings to see where the A's factored in, and doesn't look like they're going to be a factor this year in the postseason at all.
Well, pitching's a very finicky and fickle type aspect of baseball, because the thing about it is, no matter what pitcher you have, it's one pitcher. So it really is that 1-in-3 maximum type performance. And 1-in-3, I'm talking about World Series, a guy with an arm of lead who will never get tired, you know, pretty much a mechanical arm.
Sure. Scherzer is the same thing. I mean, you know, what a privilege to sit and watch Verlander, Scherzer, Miguel Cabrera, you know, a number of people. I always talk to my friends in Wisconsin about how they're lucky to be able to watch the Green Bay Packers every Sunday, whereas, you know, we get to watch here. It's like, this is how it's done. This is a master class in how to play baseball when you go watch a Brewers game.
Yeah.
You know, sorry, but that's a fact.
Well, and one thing about the Tigers, too, which I do have to applaud, is over the course of this season, they figured out the pitching game a little bit. And again, I credit Brad Ausmus for this. I got to say, earlier in the year, everybody was talking about how they want his head on a stick, on a spike, whatever. I mean, Brad Ausmus has done nothing since but impress, in my opinion. This has been quite the comeback for the Tigers this year. I don't think there's any chatter anymore about him losing his job prematurely. Now, over the offseason, if the Tigers fail to make the playoffs, that'll start back up. But that's no guarantee. I think they will make the playoffs. I think this Tigers team is stronger than the Orioles. I believe the Orioles are 5-5 in their last 10. Sorry, guys. The Tigers are 8-10 in their or 8 of 10 in their last 10. But the Detroit Tigers are on fire right now, and I believe that's actually tied for the hottest streak in baseball, along with the Houston Astros and New York Mets. So, you know, not doing anything too wrong in that category. So if you've got any thoughts on that, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But going back to Detroit, we actually got another big game coming up tonight, and it's big for some people. It really doesn't matter at the end of the day for the overall grand scheme of things, but the Detroit Lions will play their final preseason game. It's at home, and it's against the Buffalo Bills. So one thing that this reminds me, as always, is Matthew Stafford's expected to sit, so is Ziggy Ansah, so is everybody that you probably want to see. So preseason football, once again, you just got to air your grievances that they got too many games. What are they doing with four? Football is the one sport, too, where you really shouldn't have more games than are required because of the risk of head injuries or injuries to any part of your body. It's so grueling. It's so brutal. But football, basically the preseason games are 1/4 of what the regular season is. How does that make sense? That's the equivalent to a basketball team playing more or less 20 games in the preseason. That's so stupid. That's inane. There's no reason for there to be football preseason that stretches the entirety of a month and really rules out people for the regular season. But you know what? Whatever. Because I am happy that football's back. So I'll even watch the preseason game. And even with stars like Matthew Stafford and Ziggy Ansah expected to sit, I think there are still some very interesting things going on. One is watching wide receiver Andre Roberts. I really like this receiving core when it comes to Matthew Stafford's arsenal on this team. Of course, the Lions signed Marvin Jones to a five-year, $40 million contract this offseason. Golden Tate coming back, in my opinion, my very humble one, but I think he has the potential to this year be a top 10 receiver in the NFL. He's one of my fantasy sleepers. And, oh, I forgot to say it yesterday. I was going on my fantasy rant about all the idiots from my draft, the one who drafted Kirk Cousins 26 overall. I'm sorry, I'm not meaning to give him too much flack, but at the same time, who drafts Kirk Cousins 26 in the draft? But do not draft Demaryius Thomas. That's a promise from me that he will disappoint, he will underwhelm, because the Denver Broncos think Trevor Siemian is most likely their starter for the regular season. So if we've got any sad music, we can play that. I'm not sure if we do, but tier. So anyway, though, do not draft Demaryius Thomas. But for the Lions, you've got such a deep receiving core this year. Trust in the process. And Andre Roberts is a guy who I can really see breaking out of his chains. I think he'll be a good player for this team going forward and still pretty young as well. So I like watching him. Eric Ebron, we're not sure about what he's going to do. So watch Orson Charles, the secondary tight end, because if Ebron's hurt for the first game of the regular season or even first few, he very well could be back. But even if he's back, he's going to be somewhat limping or lingering with this injury. So Orson Charles, somebody to look out for, a fourth-year man out of Georgia. Of course, Anquan Boldin also in that receiving staff. I'd expect him to probably get a few reps just because he hasn't looked like his total self during the preseason. Then the most interesting thing for me actually comes in two different positions. One is D-tackle, where A'shaun Robinson, I'm looking at the official Lions depth chart right now on their website, DetroitLions.com. A'shaun Robinson is listed as the other D-tackle. And I don't know, whenever it's your spot on the roster is other, I don't think that's a good thing. Movies like The Other Guy, The Other Person, The Other Woman, whatever. Other always implies the secondary. You don't really want to be thrown into that category. So A'shaun Robinson, almost a little bit disappointing, I guess, for this Lions team. Not as pro-ready as they expected him to be. But look at him, because I think Haloti Ngata has really sealed up that 1D tackle position. He's looked good in the preseason so far. But Tyron Walker, Caron Reed, Stephon Charles, A'shaun Robinson, all listed in that other spot. And I think they all have a chance to see significant playing time over the course of this year in a rotation and commission type setting. So I'm interested to see that. The other thing is the cornerback number two position as well as the nickelback. Now, I love Nevin Lawson. He was very good last season, had a lot of tackles. He also only allowed 50% of passes thrown his way to be completed. So a good player. I like his tackling. Another player, though, who I think actually has quite a similar style and I like almost as much is Quandre Diggs, who's most likely going to assume the nickel position. But I really like Quandre, and I wouldn't rule out his competition for that spot. I do think Nevin Lawson will start off the season as the starting cornerback, but if any sort of problems arise and you see him surmount throughout the course of the year to a point where maybe Jim Caldwell doesn't really want to manage it anymore, don't be surprised to see Quandre Diggs step into that spot, as well as Johnson Badmosi. He's a good player, and I really think that this is a deep, deep Lions team. If you guys remember Badmosi, it's because he played in Stanford, on Stanford's roster, that I believe, I'm actually not sure if that was the Rose Bowl one, but it might have been when Harbaugh was the coach at Stanford. So it still was in the golden era, or the modern golden era, at least, for that team. Also, John Bostic, backup middle linebacker. I want to see him keep plowing ahead. But, you know, if you've got any thoughts on the Lions preseason game, or if you've got any thoughts on the Detroit Tigers finally moving into that number five position, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. 855-9527. We're going to hit our first break for the hour, but there's still plenty more to come. I'm going to bring you my report from the MSU Women's Volleyball Media Day. Very interesting and a lot of high expectations circling around this team this year. So I caught up with a lot of the players as well as head coach Kathy George. That'll be a good segment, as well as Kevin Williams starting for MSU. We're going to give you a brief preview there. Of course, tomorrow's entire show with Al Martin back in the seat will be centered around MSU football. But you're listening to WKR's Current Sports. I'm Isaac Constance filling in for Al Martin today. Hope you enjoy. Welcome back to WKR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, the regular engineer and co-host of WKR's Current Sports. I'm filling in for Al Martin. He's back tomorrow. Not yet set to miss the first game of football. Don't think it for a second. But we just finished up a good chat about the Detroit teams that are in action right now. The Detroit Lions, of course, having their final preseason game tonight, as well as the Detroit Tigers having clinched, or at least for the moment, they are in the fifth overall spot in the AL, meaning they've got the wild card. So big news there. Round of applause for the Tigers. But there's more going on than just football and baseball. Like I said, it's September. Happy first, people. It's the busiest time of the year. So I was actually able to participate last month in the middle of it in MSU Women's Volleyball Media. And let me just say, I'm not too bad. I really am not. I've got a decent jump on me. I used to have a 30-inch vertical, actually, when I was a freshman in high school. I was very, very springy, I guess you could call it. But I started lifting weights more. And now, of course, all that muscle has died down because I don't really lift as much as I should anymore. But so is my jumping muscle, so I can't jump high anymore. But I still have a little bit of that spring, a little bit of that step. So I'm a decent spiker. I'm just not that bad at the game. I really am not. So it was fun, though. My game improved tenfold at the event because MSU Women's Volleyball, you have to commend them. They do the best job of any athletics department I've ever been to in holding their media day. Because what it is, it's a training clinic, more or less, for media members before an actual competition. So they showed me how hidden. I'll just pass on a few tips to you guys, first of all. But did you know that when you're serving, I always thought that you wanted the ball to hit at the very base, at the bottom of your palm, you know, at the very hard part. There's a bone right below it. It's right next to your wrist. It's conjoined. I always thought that's where you wanted to hit it. You don't. You want to hit it flat with the palm because otherwise it's going to get a bunch of loft that you don't want. It makes it easy to field. The serve should be a weapon. So you want to hit it with the flat of the palm. It actually really helps. And usually, just because of the height of the net, it still goes over, but it just grazes over instead of flying over and you've got to worry about going out of bounds or anything like that. Very, very helpful tip there. Also, when you're spiking, you want your wrist loose, believe it or not. You want your hand firm, but your wrist loose. That way, the ball actually goes towards the ground and you've got a little more control of it. Another very interesting tip. As well as, I had no idea that there was a setter. Every single team, of course I knew there were positions, but I thought whoever really had the opportunity to set would set to a teammate. What happens on the defensive counter is you try to bump it up to the setter who will set it for the offensive attack. It's really quite an interesting strategy. It's simple, but at the same time, it's very effective. And it was great learning from those girls and head coach Kathy George. But so we've actually got a segment from that, though. I compiled a bunch of the different interviews that I did. Who you're going to hear first from is Kathy George, head coach of the team. And then I guess we're going in reverse order of seniority. Or actually, we're going in order of seniority, top to bottom. Yeah, I guess that's how you'd explain it. But Autumn Christensen and Alyssa Fitterer, both seniors. I also got the chance to catch up with them, as well as transfer Autumn Bailey, who went down early last season with an injury. She's coming back and expected to be a big part of this team, as well as freshman Maggie Midget. I had the chance to ask her why she chose MSU, and I had the chance to ask all of them what their goals were for this upcoming season.
Going into year 12, yeah. Are there any still game one jitters?
No, I mean, I don't know that I call them game one jitters, but if you know me, I mean, all coaches are a little bit, you know, they're all anxious for the games to get going, and we recognize obstacles that are ahead of us, and we're, you know, we've got our eyes wide open to everything, and so we're on point, and so you're always excited, and you're looking for, you know, what are things that can get in our way from achieving what we want to achieve, and what are things that are going to help us do that, and so, you know, you're really working every day to improve so that you can get that much better, and so that we can get tougher and tougher to beat. And so we work to shore that up all the time. Mm-hmm. And we get players, you know, we want to get their players' minds in the right place. We want to get them toughened up and ready to go and compete in the toughest league in the country.
Okay. And what are this team's biggest strengths going forward into this upcoming
year? You know, I think that if you look at us, we're probably one of the more physical teams nationally. I don't know this for a fact. I'm not speaking in facts, but probably one of the top five or top, you know, certainly one of the top 5% for sure. You know, we have size and we have athleticism, and so we're going to probably have the strength at the net. We're looking to improve, you know, from a year ago what we were doing, you know, behind that. We want to make sure that our ball control and our passing and that, you know, adds to that, and I think that we definitely have gained depth in that area, and we have strength in every day in practice, and it's been a big a point of emphasis for us, and so I'm really pleased with where we're going in that direction, and but we have that strength. We also have the depth strength, so there was a lot of players, you know, we were very banged up last year, so because of that, everybody played, and everybody played extensive minutes, and with that then comes the experience that they gained through those situations, so now we have depth, and we have a legitimate depth where we can go in and say, this is what they bring, and this is going to work well against the opponent's defense. We don't have to worry about them getting in for the first time ever and being nervous about that. They've been there, done that, and done it against very good competition. So we think the depth is going to serve us well as we go through the season.
Like you said, a lot of upperclassmen this year and a lot of injuries last year. So everybody's sort of experience going forward. What gives you the confidence that this team could be special this upcoming year?
You know, there is a certain focus that they have, a certain maturity that they've gained. And, you know, we've been predominantly freshman and sophomore laden for the last couple of years. And if you notice, that sophomore class is seven deep. And that's a lot for, you know, 12 scholarships in a program. So there's, you know, so now we've moved to where the majority of our team is junior, senior laden. And they have goals. They have their mind is right where it needs to be. And they're focused and they know what they're up against. It's not surprising to them that the Big Ten is tough. It's not like they've never been to a venue or, you know, with certain different crowds or anything. I mean, they're ready to go, and they know how hard it is to achieve what they want to achieve, and it's not just showing up. It's not hoping for victories. It's working every single flipping day for victories. And so you're knowing that little thing can be the big difference, and you don't want to be the one that's letting your team down in that way. So they work very hard at improving themselves.
When it all comes down to it, and it's that final game, the last few points, whatever it is, how important is that maturity and leadership to have on the roster?
Huge, because, you know, if you have an experience, and, you know, it doesn't mean that you've always handled it well. It's that you know what you're up against now, and so you're driven. You have it in your mind of, I'm accepting this challenge, and I'm going to conquer this challenge. I'm going to conquer these things that maybe either I have done well before or I haven't done well before. We are together, and I've gotten myself kind of the repetitions, the confidence to go into those roles. And I think that, you know, our players have been, you know, they know you go through those things. You go at them and you prepare yourself for those moments.
And having talked to the seniors and juniors, it seems like the Final Four, the championship, all of that really is on their minds. Mm-hmm. What gives you the confidence that that's a realistic expectation for this year?
Because when we look at, you know, when we look at where we're at, and we know what it takes. I mean, all, you know, we had two teams in the Final Four, and we know that we were within 2 points of Nebraska. We went 5 with them last year, and it was 16-14, and we played tough against Minnesota, and, you know, both of them returned. So it's really about the fact that we're in these matches with these teams that we know. I mean, every year, the Big Ten gets 9 or 10 teams in the NCAA tournament. Yep. So with that being the case, we know what it takes to win a national championship. We understand what it takes to get to a Final Four, Elite Eight, or Sweet 16, and we've been there. So it's, what do we have to do I think with an older group, they recognize the little points that we give up or that we've given up. And how are we going to clean that up? Well, we've been working on that since January. So their confidence is we've done something about that, and we've been working our tails off to put ourselves in position. Nobody can guarantee what happens or, know what to go in there. But what we're looking at is every day, are we getting better? And are we recognized? I mean, they all recognize where they need to improve, and they're all doing something about it. And that's the point. You can't just sit there and hope you're good that night. They're doing something about it, and they've been doing that since January.
All right, so what are you guys most excited for the season ahead?
I'm just really excited to leave it all on the table, meaning that I am a senior. I've learned a lot throughout my years, and I'm just really excited to give it all for one last shot, and hopefully we can go the distance with it for sure.
Yeah, going off what Adam said, basically I am excited to just take one game at a time. I think we focus too far in the future. When we focus one game at a time, I think that's when our talents really come out.
What's the jump like from going from a junior to a senior leader on this team?
It's definitely a lot more responsibility. You have new freshmen to take care of. You want to make sure not only that the relationships on the team are very good, but that you're kind of getting the job done. Because we have that sense of urgency, because we want to do big things, we want to make sure everybody's on the same page. And as a senior, we can really feel that fire.
I feel like what she's saying is all wrapped up into one word, which is like culture. And I feel like being here for 4 years, we've really understood and learned the culture ourselves. So really just relaying that to the underclassmen and really just leaving MSU with that positive note on like what MSU is as Michigan State volleyball team culture and like what we need to push for and strive for. So really just like relaying that to everybody.
With so many upperclassmen and having made the playoffs last year and got to the second round, there's a lot of optimism, it seems like. What do you guys expect for from this team this upcoming year?
Definitely great things. Really achievable things. Like she said, like we do have a goal of making it to the Final Four, but it's really just making that one step at a time to reach that goal. But I would say it's definitely possible.
And one reason why I think it's so possible is just because we have so much depth on our team. Not only do we have a massive amount of upperclassmen in our junior and senior classes, but our freshmen and sophomores are very talented too. So wherever we're lacking talent, they can come in and help.
Okay. And then if you had to say it, last time as a Spartan would be the dream memory, looking forward.
What would be the dream is my last year, definitely making it to the Final Four. Having that would be the best Christmas present.
Uh-huh. The best all time, for sure.
All time.
Just ending the note on a very successful season would be the best thing I could ask for sure.
Yeah, going in with your sisters, basically, and leaving it all.
So coming off of last year, terrible injury in the first game.
Yeah.
Are you nervous at all about getting back on the court officially?
Yeah, we just had our green and white scrimmage, so that was kind of good for me to feel out the court and that. But I'm a little nervous. I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little nervous about it. But we've been practicing a lot. I've gotten a lot of reps in preseason, so I feel pretty confident with my skills again, and we're gonna get back to normal.
And for you, having come here as a transfer last year, how's your role changed after a year, just at least being with the squad?
Yeah, I was really excited to get in and play right away when I got here last year, but having a year off, I got to know the girls better and to make relationship with the girls off the court. So that will definitely help me on the court this year.
And then after exiting last round from the playoffs, going forward this year, what are the expectations?
Yeah, we have high expectations for our team this year. We have a lot of depth on this team. We're expecting to win a Big Ten championship. We want to make the Final Four in the NCAA tournament. So, yeah, big things this year we're expecting.
As you can see, a lot of returning upperclassmen. How's this bolster the strength of this roster?
Yeah, we're a super mature team. Everyone's been talking about that a lot. A lot of seniors, a huge junior class. I think we have 7 juniors with red shirts included, so a lot of maturity, and hopefully that'll help us stay consistent throughout the whole season.
And if you had to say it, just putting you on the spot, what would be the dream result and expectation for this year?
I mean, an NCAA championship. I think everybody would want that, but and Big Ten championship.
So what made you decide to come to MSU in the first place?
I went on a lot of visits for my future volleyball career, and right when I stepped on this campus, I already knew, like, this was the school I want to go to. A big reason would be the people and the team I met. They were very welcoming, and they were just all super friendly, and this is like a team I wanted to be around for 4 years. So, yeah.
What sort of advice has the senior and junior members of the team given to you so far?
They've given a lot of advice. It's very helpful because coming in as a freshman, especially a freshman setter, it is a lot of stress and pressure on me. So Rachel has helped me a lot with setting and technique, But even the smallest things like working out, doing lifts, and our runs, like helping us like keep it under control, yeah. keep our composure, even the slightest things helped a lot.
How long have you guys been practicing for?
We started preseason about 2 weeks ago, so okay. double days up until about this week. And we actually did this thing called the program, which was a lot of mental and physical testing for us. Not as much physical as much as mental, but it really showed who could like pull through and be a leader, and everyone showed that quality. So it really helps with our captains, Chloe and Rachel. They really like stood out a lot.
Okay. Anything in particular that you're excited for about the regular season?
I first college season. Yeah. I'm just everything about it. I'm super excited. Traveling, especially San Diego. I've never been to California. I always wanted to go. So I'm just super excited.
Okay. And if you had a dream expectation or result, what would that be? Putting you on the spot there.
National champions. I think that's everyone's dream, but we're really working hard for that this year.
Yeah, everybody really seems to think that it's a possibility this upcoming year. And that's what I love about these events, too, is you can gauge the actual intent of the players. And they are dead set focused on a national championship. Definitely winning the Big Ten in their eyes. And then Final Four for the seniors would be the lasting memory. Just like in basketball, you saw how much that meant to a guy like Travis Trice. It'd be very similar come this time again around again, first, you heard Kathy George, head coach of the program. Second, you heard the seniors, Autumn Christensen and Alyssa Fitterer. Third, you heard Autumn Bailey, a junior and a transfer last year who came over from Marquette. And then fourth, you heard Maggie Midget, who is a freshman this upcoming year, and she's set to be a very important part of the team. I say set to because she's set to be a setter. Which, like I said, didn't know that was a position until I actually went to the event. But that was great fun attending, and we're hoping for a good season from the team for this upcoming year. They are 3-0 at this moment after completing the San Diego State tournament with really no scratches coming off that. Never even had that close of a game. So we're going to hit our second break right now, and coming out of that, we're going to talk about Kevin Williams starting for MSU. But it's not that black and white. It's not that simple. We're going to talk about more than just Kevin Williams. We're going to talk about the state of that defensive line for the team. Also, Throwback Thursday, like each and every Thursday, to keep you in check in terms of all of the events that happened in the past. Again, I'm Isaac Constance, filling in for Al Martin. You're listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, filling in for Al Martin, who is back from the Dominican Republic starting tomorrow. He'll be back for the start of college football, give you the lowdown and the preview for MSU versus Furman. Set to be a fun opening game, nothing too close. At least MSU fans are hoping so. But what did come out recently is two news bits about the MSU defensive line. Kevin Williams, the transfer from Nebraska this offseason, who more or less came out of nowhere, was an unexpected transfer, but he'll be starting. And not really a big shock for me here. There was a dearth of talent and a real shortage of options for MSU going forward, because the thing is, there were a lot of people who left this team. You heard me mention the quick hit headliners, all of the names. The most recent one, Enoch Smith Jr., who was a redshirt sophomore, he's gone now because he apparently, quote, felt buried on the depth chart. That's Spartan Tailgate that reported that. And Cassius Pete, another name that decided to transfer over after not really making the grades. Defensive tackle Craig Evans and defensive end Montez Sweat left for ambiguous reasons on the team. And, of course, Shalik Calhoun, Joel Heath, and Lawrence Thomas all either graduated, went to the NFL, and actually all of them, I believe, did both. So there is a void for this team at defensive line, and Kevin Williams will be starting. I think it's a good move. He didn't see too much playing time at Nebraska, but part of the reason for that is he was hurt for very, very much of his career there. So if he can stay healthy, we'll see him be a little bit more of a force. He's not a space heater, space eater like Joel Heath, in that he's only 6'2", 280. So he doesn't really have the size of one of those humongous defensive tackles who will simply stuff a run. But he's smart. He's very, very tactful. He knows what he's doing, and he's been through the storm. So I like that position. Also, Raekwon Williams is listed the second string right now for MSU, and he's a redshirt freshman. A lot of raw talent that I see right there. He's 6'4", 295, and like I said, redshirt freshman. Wasn't ready for last year, but he's listed as a co-starter in just his second year. So I think we could see a lot from Raekwon. I think he'll impress because many times there's a little bit of reluctance to play young players off the bat. You'll see that with Donnie Corley too, I believe. But once they get there and they show they got the stuff, they'll start getting the time. And I think that's the case with Raekwon Williams. But D-line is something too where I don't think you need a set line going in and out, in and out. I think what you need is a solid group of guys, meaning you can rotate it. It's not like the quarterback position, which is, in my opinion, the one thing that could plague Notre Dame against MSU if they've got any sort of controversy or a split locker room on their hands. Things will start getting a little rocky for them. But defensive line, that's not the case whatsoever. You can rotate in and out because everybody more or less has their own individual assignment. So I think that's a good thing. Of course, it's best when you have the cohesiveness for any unit. But I think this defensive line is shaping up, but a lack of depth, knock on wood, people, knock on wood. But if Kevin Williams were to go down again, because like I said, he struggled with injuries at Nebraska, this team's really in for a long run in terms of the defensive line, and quite a few long runs against them, in my opinion. So actually, it is Thursday, though, so we're not going to talk football for the rest of the show. We do have Throwback Thursday coming around the bend. Let's hit that right now.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long. Eisenman back over his step. Into the spot for Brown. Shoots, yes. Good. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
Yes, you hear the music. That means it's Throwback Thursday. So in 1890, the first ever baseball triple header occurred. That was Boston and Pittsburgh who were playing that. And I'm not sure when the most recent one was. Hopefully not too recently. That sounds like about 10 hours in a day. Also, the 33rd British Golf Open. William Ochterlony shoots a 322 at the Prestwick Golf Club. And then you've got the baseball season ending due to World War I in 1918 and Ty Cobb pitching two innings against the Browns that same year. So that's all we've got, though, for this edition of Throwback Thursday and this edition of WKR's Current Sports. Again, I'm Isaac Constance filling in for Al Marin. He'll be back in tomorrow. But I appreciate your listenership these past 2 days. And hey, 1st of September, baseball's back, football's back. You've been listening to WKR's Current Sports, AM 870 East Lansing, Michigan. Thanks for your listenership.